What's up, buds?
Radio. I'm your host, Greg Young, and on top of doing weird intros that I try to drag the you know, words around, I am joined today by Chris Watkins and Adam Strangham. So, Chris, you are the you're the toast of the Capitals Twittersphere in a certain way right now. aside from batting down a couple of occasionally angry tweets, how are you doing today?
I'm doing wonderful. It's starting to heat up, you know, across the board. So we're getting out and seeing nature a little bit more. You know, Yolo Jr. starting one this week, so we're excited about that. And then other than that, you know, I'm just trying to see how the Blackhawks will sort of screw their draft pick this year. But other than that, it's all good. I'm excited about some of the series that are happening right now. So I've been catching probably more playoff hockey than usual. So that's been good. But yeah, so I'm doing good. How about you guys?
Doing well. String, it's, you know, been I guess a week or two since we've last chatted. How are you doing? What's life in Stringham land right now?
Oh, everything's good. My wife and I make our first trip back up north here in about a week's time, so that'll be great. So my daughter will meet her grandma and her other grandparents for the first time in a little over a week, so that'll be pretty cool. So
yeah, that's awesome. And Adam, I know we have texted, and I think we are going to exactly miss each other, because I'm actually going to Texas in a couple of weeks to visit, but we're gonna exactly miss each other, which is fine. But so I guess, you know, Chris and Adam, you guys have both kind of talked about young kids, and I think young kids do a great job of putting dumb Twitter things in perspective, frankly, in terms of things not being important. But Chris, you kind of drew the ire of the Capitals fan base, and I'll just be fully transparent. I've been trying to be on Twitter less, so I haven't really paid a ton of attention, but apparently you tweeted, you know, kind of needling Capitals fans about about us celebrating the 3-year anniversary of us winning the Stanley Cup. So I will, I'm the evil bad prosecutor, and sure, I'm going to say, play the defense. What is your defense, you know, the defendant?
Yeah, I mean, as you all know, obviously, you know, this is what, more like 6th or 7th appearance on Jafer's ring. So clearly I have enough of an affinity for the Capitals to obviously, you know, come on as frequently as I do. I mean, I generally like the team, but yes, I was having some fun at the Capitals fans' expense, as I want to do for many a team. But yeah, you know, I was just like, oh, okay, this is a little bit over the top. I don't remember, you know, the Pens having their 3-year celebration. And to be fair, I don't know as many Pens fans on Twitter. You know, they are kind of hide their fandom, you know, behind the scenes. So,
it's like a black mark, you know. You just never exactly, want to be honest about it, you know.
Yeah, you know, they'll say they're Hurricanes fans or whatever in public, and then like secretly put on a you know, Evgeny Malkin, a Kobe Armstrong jersey. So, you know, that's not a frequent thing. And to be honest, you know, one of the things I've lamented is I actually don't know that many Blackhawks fans on Twitter. I've been searching for them for years. So, you know, I saw the Cats fans. And I think this year in particular was like, I mean, you know, I generally like you guys. I've hung out at a couple of the bars. NYC Cats crew does it. Great job of putting together that community and fan base up there in New York City. I was like, you guys could be annoying too. I thought, you know, this was, you know, only unique to, you know, Rangers fans or Leafs fans. So I was like, oh man, all these Tom Wilson defense tweets, it doesn't matter if Ovechkin scores 800 goals, he's still better than Crosby. It doesn't matter if he's only made it past the second round once. I'm like, huh, okay, you know, he's a little bit defensive, a little bit, you know, needling. And then obviously with the playoff flameout this year, you know, I think Cats fans are a little bit on edge. And so, you know, I apologize to anyone I offended. We'll do the non-apology. I apologize to anybody that was offended by my point of view on the Caps regaling in the past and seeing Barry Trotz succeed with yet another team. You know, I know that's got to hurt a little bit. So I understand Caps fans are very sensitive in this time, but you will get through it. As a Blackhawks fan that's not seen the second round in nearly half a decade.
I was saying, who hasn't seen the playoffs much, really. So.
Yeah, exactly. You know, trust me, I'm very happy to throw out our three rings in the past decade. Although, as someone has told me now, it's only two rings in the past decade at this point, because 2009 is receded very far into the mirror. So, you know, feel free to come at me. You know where to find me on Twitter. But yes, it's all love. I am an equal opportunity hater. It is not particularly directed at Cats fans, but just wanted to let my thoughts be known on that.
Absolutely. And Stringham, do you want to regale to Chris at all, or are we willing to kind of let bygones be bygones about this?
Oh, I mean, I wasn't too bent out of shape about it. I mean, Chris loves to needle. I mean, if you guys follow him on Twitter, you already know. So, I mean, I don't know why he would blame, you know, people living in the past when their teams only made it out of the second round twice and, you know, however many years, and we've only won it once. So I think it's pretty logical that the fans are going to cling to that for the foreseeable future here. So,
I think my particular point on that, because as I said, and Adam knows this more than anyone, the greatest hockey article I've ever seen written, and it's not for Caps fans in particular, I just think it was a great article, was Sean McAdoo's breakdown of the Caps' various come-from-ahead playoff collapses.
Yes.
I've read that maybe hundreds of times. And like I said, it's not because it's the Caps fans. I just love like reading that article and how McAdoo did it. And so it's like, we haven't forgotten those either. So it's not that you all can't celebrate the cup. It's just like we haven't forgotten the pre-cup capitals as well. And so it's like, we're going to celebrate the past. Let's go all the way back. And so that's basically all it is.
No, let's stop exactly at 2018. I don't think we should go any further back at all, obviously. Except when we're counting Alex Ovechkin for the goals record. All those count, right, but nothing else does.
Exactly.
All right, so now that we've lost half of our audience, let's move on to something even more exciting. So Chris, when I pitched you coming on, I kind of did this as the let's do the tough love on the Capitals roster, sure, segment. But I think before we go into that, I want to go a little bit broader and say, what do we think is kind of the, you know, I think that there's been a lot of articles about, oh, like, what's the perfect Stanley Cup formula? And I don't think there is one, right? I think that, like, there's a recurring theme of, oh, the team that won the cup in this past year obviously has the perfect formula and everyone should just emulate that. Right. But I guess kind of like, what's the right way to think about it? And like, what's the right way to think about developing a team that can regularly compete for the Stanley Cup?
Yeah, no, I mean, it is a very fun exercise every year to see, yes, this was the exact perfect team formulation for winning the cup. And as I said a couple of weeks ago, I will love to see, particularly if, you know, in particular, if like Colorado or Carolina wins the cup, who's going to be designated as the tough guy that secretly put them over the top. And yes. So I said, you know, for Colorado, it's going to be Patrick Nemeth. That was the trade that, you know, coalesced the team and brought them together and made them tougher. And then I have no idea who it would be for Carolina. I don't know who's the tough guy in there. Dougie Hamilton? maybe Jacob Slavin or something like that. So you know, there's always this narrative of we sort of, whatever the cup team was doing, that was the correct way to build a team. I don't think that's a very proactive approach. I think you have to sort of identify what makes the most sense for you and do it. And so one of the probably disagreements I've had with the general broader analytics community is, you know, you should go for this particular format or do X, Y, Z. And the reason why I say I disagree with them is because this was something that was brought up in the NBA where, you know, the Golden State Warriors created this whole brand new style of playing with 3-point shooters and having four or five guys that can shoot and dribble and pass and switch and all of that. And teams try to emulate them in that particular style. But the problem was that you cannot be better than Golden State was at that style. And so you would just lose to them in the playoffs every year because they were just better at it than you. So what the teams that were most successful against them were did was they identified a sort of alternative style, but and they went all in on that and sort of went in a different direction. And, you know, it didn't work every single time, but it did at least allow them a way to level the playing field, because since everyone is zigging, if you zag, those assets become suddenly more undervalued. And now you see, you know, the reemergence of the big man in this year's playoffs, and teams that were switching before are now going to more traditional defenses. And so I see the same thing in hockey, where, you know, everyone's trying to go for the puck possession game, and people are putting more precedence on that, more precedence on sort of smaller, more agile, more skilled defensemen. And there's still some untapped territory there. But, you know, you see with the Islanders and, you know, with Barry Trotz and Lou Lamoriello, that they've identified a formula that, you know, while I don't think will necessarily bring them to a cup, has allowed them to build a sustainable long-term contender. And so the argument I've made over and over again is, you know, if you want to just use a baseline metric and we'll say 20 war, or, you know, another way to look at it is, you know, I think the average team scores like 220 goals a year. So how do you get 240 goals on your roster? How do you identify a team that can score that many, or that only allows 190 goals? Like, how do you put together enough talent in place to do that with the cap constraints that currently reside? So the issue that the Blackhawks have, for example, is that because they already have, you know, 10.5 million locked up in Kane and Taves, plus another, you know, 12 million locked up in Seabrook and Keith, that half their roster is basically devoted to a style of play that is no longer in vogue anymore. And so now you have to fit in that level of talent that gets you to that 220 goals, or that, you know, 20 war, and half the cap space that any other team can do. And that's very difficult. So I think starting there is probably the first part, saying like, okay, who are the best players for our team? The way I've been looking at it is, who are the cornerstones that we build around? So you look at a team like, you know, let's use Toronto, heaven forbid. You know, Toronto's cornerstones are obviously on the front end. But, you know, obviously it's Auston Matthews. Is Mitch Marner a cornerstone? I think that's coming to question in the past, you know, a couple weeks or so, given his playoff performance. Is William Nylander maybe a cornerstone that was not seen as he was before? John Tavares, I think, probably is not one of those guys. I don't think they have one on the back end. And then they don't have any in goaltending. So basically, you start with Auston Matthews. You figure out the players that most maximize his skill set. And then you sort of work your way on down and saying, like, okay, is Mitch Marner best suited to play with Auston Matthews? Or can he drive his own line? And then do you find players that can sort of elevate him? I think the Penguins in particular have done a great job of identifying, you know, they rarely ever had Malkin and Crosby on the same line, and obviously they play the same position, so that makes sense. But, you know, even they rarely ever put the best wingers on the team on Crosby's line. They knew that Crosby had the ability to elevate, you know, more, you know, second line, third line wingers to have first line production. And so therefore they can sort of see their second and third lines, you know, having Kessel with the HBK line, you know, in the 2016-2017 years, sort of allowed them to sort of strengthen their depth with sort of low cost rentals and acquisitions. And so I think that's the sort of first part. Identify your cornerstones, identify the players that they can maximize and that maximize their skill set, sort of work from there. I mean, it's a hard cap for everyone. And so the other sort of key thing is that, like, the big pushback I have, and this is when we get to the caps, we'll talk about it, is that overpaying for your stars, I don't care how good they are, how much they mean to your team, in a hard cap league is just so difficult to sort of get around. And I hate that the NHL does not have what the NBA has, which is like a Larry Bird rule, which just says, if you want to resign a Nicholas Backstrom, if you want to resign Ovechkin, you can do that without affecting your cap hit. That's not exactly how it goes, but that at least allows you to keep your sort of franchise icons and not necessarily have to sacrifice the other parts. But when you do make those decisions and you do sort of go for nostalgia over production, then you sort of run into issues that make it very difficult. So I would say, start with your cornerstones, identify a team identity and sort of own it, even if it's different from what everybody else is doing, and just go all in on that. And then identify those undervalued assets that fit into the system that you have that you can maximize, and then go from there.
Yeah. And Adam, I kind of want to spin this forward to the Capitals. This seems like as good a time as any to kind of start digging in. So I think Chris did a decent job, or did a really good job of kind of identifying what the formula is. So I guess kind of where do we see the caps in that, basically? Like, I mean, because the other way I guess you could frame it is, when the Caps have been for as good as they have for as long as they have, eventually those really good players get older and you kind of enter what a lot of people have talked about is the cycle of contention, and the Caps may be kind of inevitably slowing down in that. So kind of where do we see the Capitals right now?
I mean, they're very clearly at the tail end, and they're going to be at that tail end for a bit longer now. I mean, for the reasons that Chris just outlined, with the Capitals they've said they're picking nostalgia over being a contender. You know, is that the right thing to do for building a champion? Probably not. Is it the right thing if their only goal is filling their, you know, continue to make money? Probably. I think it's financially keeping Ovechkin at Capitals is very, very important for the franchise. I just don't think fans would respond super positively if he ends his career somewhere else, especially if really gets that Gretzky record. So, really, I think that the Capitals are at a, they're at a crossroads here. I mean, they've made it clear that they're not really the contending team. And the one other thing that I will kind of, or when I say contending team, I mean, if you watch Colorado Vegas, the Capitals don't look like they could hang with Colorado or Vegas right now at all.
No.
Right. I mean,
or Tampa or Carolina, frankly, at this point.
Yeah. I mean, maybe they'd have a chance against Carolina. You know, they could look into stuff. I mean, Carolina's goaltending has been suspect in this series, and their penalty kill has not been good at all either. But the Capitals do have an identity, so they got that part down. It's not the same identity they had when they won the Cup. It's almost like a more intense version of that. They went from a team that could beat you multiples of ways in 2016 and 2017 to really leaning into that heavy hockey in 2018. And now they no longer really have any flex capacity. They're 100% heavy hockey now. No more Vrana. No more small skill. I mean, the Capitals are a big boy team, and that's how they try to play. That's how Laviolette wants them to play. They look a lot like the Blues did when they won the Cup, and they look similar to how the Caps did when they won the Cup. But again, you know, without kind of the skill on the third line that they did when they won. So
yeah,
that's my quick assessment of the Capitals.
No, and Chris, I kind of I'm gonna do this question in a couple of parts. So let's do part one, kind of just let's reflect kind of on where you think the Capitals are in the formula that you kind of outlined. And then I want to ask you about, you know, kind of your experience as a Blackhawks fan and seeing a team decline and kind of how you value keeping your stars versus not. Because I think the Blackhawks made their decision, I think. Right. But let's talk about where we think the Caps are first. So kind of you outlined it kind of and you heard String talk about it a little, like kind of where do you see the Caps right now?
Yeah, I mean, so I think it's a little bit difficult, sort of as Adam said, because if they were committed to winning the Cup, you know, and committed to keeping their championship window open, there's some decisions that they would be making right now that would go against the grain of sort of the sort of loyalty and sort of building on the nostalgia piece. So, you know, part one, I definitely would not have given a Nicklas Backstrom that contract. I don't think he's been worth. Nicklas Backstrom has been undervalued and underpaid throughout his career, but unfortunately now is not the time to sort of rectify that. You know, you give him a cushy front office job, or you know, have him yeah. You know, be some player development associate or something like that, or you
be
know,
an
whatever.
Ambassador have, or something.
Exactly.
You know,
yeah. You know, Ted Leonsis has plenty of other, you know, avenues and roles within his companies to figure out how to pay him back for his services. But you don't do that because then you sort of lock in what Alex Ovechkin's next contract is going to be. He wants to sort of end his career in line with Backstrom, and so now you're sort of locked in, and you're not going to pay him less than Backstrom. So you sort of have locked into what that price point is for two, you know, declining assets, and that sort of decline is accelerating, especially over the past year or so. So that's part one of it. I think in terms of like, are they that far away from being a contender? No, I mean, I think they still have enough team skill and talent within the right system to sort of coalesce together and become, you know, have one last run at it, like the Expendables or something like that. I think the two concerns I have are obviously, you know, one, you know, Kuznetsov in particular was supposed to be a bridge from the Ovi, Oshie, Backstrom sort of age group to the sort of younger guys like Vrana and the sort of younger group. The problem is that younger group does not exist in much capacity anymore. So so you don't really have that sort of next wave coming in, and that's fine. You actually kind of want, if you're going to go all in on, you know, making these next 1 or 2 years a cup run, you sort of want everybody in the right age range for that. You almost don't want those sort of, well, they'll be good in 2 or 3 years. It's like, okay, well, they won't be good soon enough for us to be good. This was my logic behind the Andrew Ladd trade for the Chicago Blackhawks in 2016. Sure. They traded, you know, a first round pick of Marco Deneau for Andrew Ladd, and that pick obviously, you know, that didn't work out. But my thought process was, well, whoever that first round pick is not going to be good. You know, even if they are an amazing player, they're not going to be the best player on the championship team in the next 5 years. Versus Andrew Ladd, yes, he may be a worse player right now, but the ability for him to contribute to a contender and put them over the top is much more important than even getting a great young pick that could turn into a star, but is a star of a declining, aging roster. And so that's the same thought process. The bigger concern I have for the Caps is that, like, the gaps that they have in terms of where a normal cup contender is or the contenders this year is that it's not 1 or 2 players. It's not that one player will put them over the top. It's 2 or 3 players and a sort of rethinking of their overall philosophy of how they run the team. And those players are very difficult to get, you know, hey, we would love to have a, you know, a dynamic, you know, third line center or, you know, 2 or 3, you know, quick and mobile defensemen. Those are not easy guys to get. So yeah. unless you can identify, you know, some guys that aren't playing right now and will never get off the bench, and you can sort of pluck them from teams that aren't suspecting, like, you have to have the assets to do that, and you have to have a partner willing to give that up, and you have to be able to identify and get your coach to buy in to actually play them. If you can't do all three of those things, it's going to be very difficult to cross that chasm. And so I think that's the bigger concern I have, is that the Caps aren't that far away, but not that far away is getting further and further away as time goes on.
Yeah, and String, I kind of want to ask you this. I think that I struggle a little bit because, I mean, I think being, you know, bowing out in the first round again in the third straight postseason post cup is obviously frustrating. Although the Caps have done pretty well in the regular season, they've, you know, been either won the division or been right there and very close to winning it. So I guess kind of like, how much do you kind of factor in the postseason frustration and failure versus kind of their success in the regular season when it comes to evaluating both kind of where they are in the contention window, but also just in terms of evaluating the roster?
I mean, ultimately, it kind of comes down to the playoffs. I mean, but let me be clear. I don't think right now the roster evaluation that's going on is anything like, you know, a post-2010 loss to Montreal panic levels about the roster or a style of player like that. I mean, the Capitals haven't lost these last few years because of a hot goalie, or, you know, I mean, they've been outplayed handedly in 2 of the 3 series, you know, right, against Carolina. You know, they had a stretch of awful games there. I mean, it was in an article in The Athletic today about kind of expected goals over the course of a series or over, I think, a 3-game stretch. And I guess Carolina, I don't remember Carolina dominating them that long, but I certainly remember, I remember Game 7 and how the Capitals really had that game kind of in the bag and then, of course, went on to blow it. But and the Bruins series, they could have been up 3-0, and instead they were up, they were down 2-1, obviously, again. So it's a, But they weren't good in most of those series.
Nope. I think it's safe to say they were beaten pretty soundly by Boston in everything but the goal total.
Yeah. They were a team that could have won the Boston series, but they didn't deserve to win the Boston series. And I don't know, Greg. So I guess my short answer, too long didn't listen, is no. I don't think that's really coloring the analysis. I think the Capitals still have some nice top end talent. Even in his age, Ovechkin is still a great goal scorer. I'm not sure, but I just don't think the team is right there. I mean, I think Chris made a good point. They could be there. They're not that far away. But at the same time, each year that they're not that far away, the next year they'll be a bit further away because of the age of their core.
Yeah, and quickly on that, I mean, because you had asked me about sort of the Blackhawks, and this is, you know, a perfect example. So Ovechkin is still a great goal scorer, but not quite the well-rounded player he was, you know, earlier in his career. And obviously, even with the defensive sort of reputation that he had, he still can at least, you know, manage to hold his own in terms of like puck possession, you know, defending his own zone, defending the neutral zone, getting the puck through. And it's very similar to the conversation around Duncan Keith, who for a 37-year-old or 38-year-old is, you know, still, it's remarkable that he's even playing, you know, given how, you know, much hockey is a young man's game at this point, and that he's still able to keep up relatively well for his age is great. But the fact that he's our first pair defenseman sort of indicates all the things that have gone wrong with the Blackhawks over the past half decade. And to me, it's the same thing with Ovechkin, where if Ovechkin was the second line, winger, and, you know, Tom Wilson has elevated to a 60 point a season scorer and averaging 30 goals or whatever, then you're happy about that. If he becomes the next Matthew Tkachuk, okay, great. Then you can move Ovechkin down, but you still are reliant on him to sort of drive a lot of your offense. And at a certain point of time, you know, the juice isn't worth the squeeze. And so I think that's where, you know, as a Caps fan, I'd be most concerned. If I'm more concerned about winning, if I'm concerned about the nostalgia piece, obviously, you know, let LV get all the ice time he wants, bomb away. But if we're talking about like, who do I want to become, who do I want the offense and the team to revolve around? It probably shouldn't be Alex Ovechkin at this point anymore. But when you look around the rest of the roster, like, who is that person that is going to take his place then? And it was supposed to be Kuznetsov, but obviously that's not happening, and it's actually becoming less likely as time goes on.
Yeah. No, and I mean, talk about the nostalgia piece a little bit. I mean, you're a Blackhawks fan. You kind of, I think, had a, you know, I wonder almost, you know, I think the Caps are obviously in a slightly different position than the Blackhawks post them winning three cups. But, you know, it did seem like they kind of, you know, made their decisions. Or kind of, I guess, kind of evaluate as a fan the pros and cons of, you know, seeing those same players kind of, you know, in and out, remain on the team.
Yeah, so I think the worst thing that happened to Stan Bowman, other than him being Stan Bowman, was that the Penguins in particular have sort of blown a hole in the story that, hey, you know, this is the price that you pay for winning, you know, three cups. You know, as much as Penguins fans are sort of apoplectic about how the team has performed in the past few years, they've been much closer to sort of contention than the Blackhawks have been. And so obviously they have two all-time greats, and well, one all-time great in Sidney Crosby and a guy who's not a top 100 player of all time in Evgeny Malkin. But outside of that, they've been able to sort of build around those pieces and find guys like Brian Rust and I'm blanking on the guy's name now. Who's the Gensel, and guys like that to sort of supplement the core.
Jason Zucker and stuff like that. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, they've been aggressive in making trades and so on and so forth. And they've been all in on sort of, you know, they don't have much of a prospect pipeline, so on and so forth. But back to my point about the Andrew Ladd trade, at a certain point, like, if your dollars are tied up in Kane and saves anyway, you sort of do have to identify ways to sort of keep that window open. The Blackhawks have said they've been doing that, and that was the justification for getting a whole bunch of veterans over the past few years before they swerved fully into the rebuild, but they've not been able to do that. So in one sense, you know, I go back and forth with Blackhawks fans all the time. Hey, Patrick Kane is still, you know, third in the league in points and so on and so forth. You know, he's still a great player, and I'm like, not really, but you know, at the end of the day, if that's all you have to hang your hat on, then so be it. You know, that's what, you know, drives people to the stadium. That's what keeps the, you know, the vendors going and so on and so forth. I understand that. But I also think, like, there's a way that you can straddle both lines where it's like, okay, yeah, we may not be winning now, but, you know, the Kings are doing it really well. For example, they still have Kopitar, Dustin Brown, you know, Jonathan Quick is still on the roster somehow. They still have that old guard to sort of allow the fans to hang on to that. But then they have the Quentin Byfields of the world, and the Gabe Vilardis and all that coming up through the pipeline that lets you see, like, hey, that's going to be the next competitive Kings team. And I don't think Blackhawks fans see that right now. I think that's also the concern for the Capitals is that, like, hey, once this nostalgia thing goes out, like, once Obi does hit, you know, Gretzky's number, is it going to be 10 years of darkness after that? Because, you know, it may be great for this generation of Caps fans, but for the next one, it's going to suck.
Yeah. No, that's fair. That's fair. That's fair. All right. Let's talk real quick about Ovi's contract, and then we're going to take a quick break. So, I guess, Adam, I'll start with you. Like, you know, I think we've kind of talked a little about what the contract's going to look like and kind of how it fits into the Caps plans and their future roster decisions going forward, to say nothing about the Seattle draft, but kind of what are you hoping the contract looks like, and slash what are you expecting it to look like?
I believe it came out that the Caps are budgeting like double digit for Ovechkin, being $10 million. So that's what I think it will come in at. Obviously, I'd hope it'd be less. Like the lowest you could realistically expect would be Backstrom's deal. As kind of Chris already laid out, like I just feel like Ovechkin wouldn't want to take less than that. I think it'll be worth a bit less than that. But you know what? Again, I've kind of from the beginning been a bit of a team nostalgia guy, so it's hard for me to get too bent out of shape there. You know, the Caps are going to do what they've got to do to retain Ovechkin. I mean, they don't have a single leg to stand on. I mean, the amount of times they have publicly said that they are not going to let Ovechkin go anywhere is staggering. And it is not like the Tavares situation where, you know, the team wanted the guy to stay and the player didn't. I mean, it's very clear that I don't think Ovechkin has any real desire to go anywhere else, except for to Dynamo Moscow, and he's not going to do that until probably the last few years of his playing career. So, that's what I'm thinking.
Chris, deliver the tough love here. What would be a good contract for the Capitals to sign Alex Ovechkin, and how far away do you think that they're likely to be from that?
we can pull out our old Andre Burakovsky special. Adam knows what I'm talking about, where we pitched a 3-year, $42 million contract to Andre Burakovsky like 3 or 4 years ago in our fake offseason. And that to me would sort of make more sense. You would obviously have to slough some people off the rosters to make that work, but you know, sort of lowering the because to me, it's not even the AAV. It's obviously the term for that. Do I think OV will, you know, game will continue to age pretty well? Yeah, I think so. But do I think he's a $10 million a year player at age 39 or whatever it will be? Probably not. And so how do you sort of straddle the line between that? So if I were to say for a 5-year term, probably closer to like $6 million in terms of a good contract. You know, I still think he's probably going to be worth even less than that at the end of the contract. But we calculate in the gate receipts and the nostalgia and all that stuff like that. Plus, you know, the thing I will give Ovechkin credit for is he does sort of bring a clarity to your team, particularly obviously your power play, but also just your offense, where I know where, you know, if my goal is to, as I said, get that 220 goals, I know where 40 of those goals are coming from. And yeah. So now I'm going to take the rest of the roster to figure out those other 180. And go from there. And so that sort of gets you very close to that, much closer to that number than most other players at his age. So I would say, yeah, you know, six over five would make sense. But if I were them, I would really try to push for, hey, we can give you $11, $12 million a year, but it's only going to be for, you know, 1 or 2 years, and then we'll renegotiate after this, and sort of allow Ovi the sort of optionality to say, like, hey, I've hit the goal mark, I've gotten paid significantly in that time frame. Maybe I'm happy to cut those last couple of years a little bit short, give you all some cap relief, and then go off and play in Moscow with the goals record in hand and still sort of cashing out, and then allow the Capitals to be free of that, you know, significant cap hit in the last two or 3 years of that deal.
All right. Well, that's definitely definitely an interesting perspective, and I think the reporting kind of shows how far how far away it seems like the Caps might be from that. But with that, we're gonna take a quick break. On the other side, we're gonna dive more into the Caps roster. So strap in. Welcome back to Japers Rink Radio. Still here with Chris and Adam, and guys, we're diving in to the Caps roster even a little bit more here. So let's start from the center perspective. And it seems like the Caps are in a tough spot, Chris. Kuznetsov is, you know, still has another quite a bit of term and quite a bit of AAV on there. And Backstrom obviously is signed for a while and signed for probably too much money at this point. So right. I don't know. It seems like the Caps are in a tough spot there. Like, what's the way out? And would you think about moving Kuznetsov at this point?
Yes, but so this is gonna be an interesting answer. So yes, I would consider moving him, but not necessarily because of his on-ice play. So despite the narrative that's been around Kuznetsov the past few years, and I've been one of the key people ringing that bell, that the sort of underlying metrics have been falling out more so than his reputation has. I actually think he's been a better player this year, particularly defensively, than he has been the past couple of years.
Yeah, that was kind of wild, wasn't it? He actually was. That was crazy.
Yeah, so, you know, by my count, his defensive metrics are way up. Now, obviously, his scoring numbers and his raw point totals are down. But in terms of being a more complete player and more along the lines of the player that I think the Caps were expecting, you know, minus the goal scoring and the assists, he's been a much better player this year than he has been the past year. So I think there has been some positive regression on his part that I think is good for the Capitals. I think the concern for them would be like, hey, actually, do you want to get this player away where his reputation is waning, but his on-ice play is getting better? Maybe he's more valuable to us than he is to another team. I would say my counter to that would be I would trade him, not necessarily because I think it will make the team better, but I do think it will give some more clarity, you know, just being able to move his cap hit and be able to find a player, given where he's at currently, being able to find a player at about, you know, $4 or $5 million a year that can contribute roughly as much, maybe in slightly different ways than Kuznetsov does at least allow them a little bit more flexibility than they currently have. I think basically what I'm saying is I don't think trading Kuznetsov is going to be the difference between them making the playoffs or not making the playoffs. And so if they can get a player in return for Kuznetsov, maybe a draft pick as well, and then turn that extra cap space into another depth piece, and particularly on the back end, then that probably puts them further ahead than keeping Kuznetsov as currently is. And so I think he's better. His sort of value around the league might not be lower than it is currently. And it may be worth it for them to keep him. But I would bet on that and just trade him now before, you know, maybe the pumpkin, you know, turns back into a pumpkin at midnight and sort of left holding the bag and then you can't move him. I would try to move him while you can and still recoup value for him.
And it's string, I guess, kind of, let me, one, would you move Kuznetsov? And two, kind of, how are you thinking, while we're still talking about centers, about the Backstrom contract at this point?
Backstrom contract, I mean, again, the Caps were going to do what they were going to do nostalgia-wise. He looked awful in the playoffs this year. He's an older guy. He was never a fast skater to begin with, so... I mean, that's going to be a concern, a continual concern going forward. But, I mean, he did lead the Capitals in points this year, for what that's worth. So, certainly will be an overpay by the end of the contract. But, again, it is what it is. And I think the Capitals are on the Stan Bowman train of it's a sunk cost for the championship. So, they're okay with it. For Kuznetsov. I don't think the Capitals win a lot of trades that involve Kuznetsov leaving the team. I still think he can be a dynamic player. We haven't seen him be a dynamic player, especially offensively, in a little bit now. As Chris pointed out, he's looked better defensively. But unfortunately, what the Capitals kind of need from Kuznetsov isn't necessarily a two-way style of play. I mean, obviously... Right. The net goals are the most important thing, but the Caps need another element to their offense to be a successful team. That was what was missing in my mind when they were playing the Bruins this year. I mean, they did not threaten enough. They weren't able to possess the puck for extended periods of time enough and they need Kuznetsov to be a guy who can take over the game still. I mean, when you go back and watch what he did in 2018 in the playoffs, I mean, he was just on a whole totally different level. I mean, just absolute dominance. It reminded me of what Malkin did for the Penguins in 2009. Just start to the end. He was amazing. Ovechkin as well. But I don't think you win a deal with Kuznetsov, especially with all of the marks on his reputation now for the substances and his multiple COVID positives during the season.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. So I guess, Chris, like, you know, do the Caps have any good value contracts on the front end when just kind of expanding out to forwards? Is there anything you think oh, okay, that's a contract we can kind of build on, or because we're gonna dive into even a little more pessimistic kind of stuff later on, but maybe give us a tiny bit of optimism. Is there any kind of particular player or is from a valuation standpoint that you're thinking, okay, like this actually might be a pretty solid net for the Caps?
Is Connor Sherry a free agent this year? I mean, this is sort of part and parcel for the Caps that unfortunately most the only good player, I won't even say good, the only player of value I guess under 26 is Sprong, and I don't think he's on.
Yeah, that was where my head went, but that's not ideal because Sprong is probably what, a third line player next year at best, I would imagine. Maybe
third line player and a guy that's been passed around the league, with little to minimum value at all. And so I think that's the sort of the hard part. Now, obviously, they have some exciting prospects. Connor McMichael, Hendrix Lafier, who's I'm getting his jersey as soon as he makes the league, just because that's the best name I've ever heard.
Yes, it's an incredible name.
but outside of that, I mean that's the hard part where you sort of go all in on the veteran piece. Is that you, and it's funny enough that I think the Maple Leafs got a lot of flack this year for going in for like the veterans and sort of surrounding their young talent with the butt of chick guys on the bottom of the roster, the Bogosians and the Thorntons and the Wayne Simmons of the world. But there's some, I would say that was not necessarily the wrong approach. This is actually something I used to do a lot in the NHL, like 17 or whatever. Which is, I would sign Ovechkin, when he became a free agent, like a $4 million contract, but it was year to year because he was still, 86 rated, but because he's so old, teams wouldn't give him term. So I would sign him to this sort of, 1 year big money contract. So, if you look at a guy like a Ryan Getzlaf, who actually, it's not great, definitely not the guy he used to be, but if you could get him for $2 million, he's probably better than what you get for a normal center, that's much younger at $2 million. And so something like that. But sure. In terms of being able to get anything back in a trade, like I don't see it. The only way I really see them doing anything is sort of opening up roster spots and cap space by trading guys for draft picks, third or fourth rounders. And it's not really because you want the picks, it's because you need the space and then sort of replacing those guys with younger players. But a lot of, no movement clauses, a lot of guys that whose contracts made them untradeable. I mean, I just don't really see the way out. The obvious sort of way to do that we can't do with the Skaters is in the net, but I think they're sort of set in that with two big question marks, and I don't really know where they're going to go with that either.
Yeah, that's fair. And I guess I was looking at the Japers Rink radio archives, and we actually had you on right before the Vrana trade, so sure. I guess kind of like We've talked a lot about this, and we've hit on a little bit of kind of the impact of the Vrana for Mantha swap, but kind of where do you place that? Like, because I think as a Capitals fan, I was a little nervous seeing that, two players that, maybe you say, okay, they're roughly comparable, but then you start seeing draft picks go the other way. Obviously, Mantha gives a little more cost certainty, but kind of how did you break that trade down?
Yeah, I mean, I actually came out in defense of the Capitals. As everyone was saying, and my numbers were sort of screaming that this is literally the same exact player. I have a similarity score between players and their playing styles, and it's like number one and two was Vrana and Mantha. So the argument I made on behalf of the Caps, knowing that was the case, was Mantha has a little bit more defensive juice and sort of two-way play than Vrana did at the time. And that despite his injury history, the fact that at least Peter Laviolette will at least trust him a little bit, does make a difference because, it doesn't matter how good Jacob Vrana is if the coach never plays him. Obviously, I've been, 75% of my appearances on here have been extolling the virtues of Jacob Vrana. No one believed in him. So that sort of undermined his value, not because he wasn't a good player, but because there was something about his play that coaches just didn't believe in. And I don't think that was the case for Mantha. I think where I do give them credit is obviously, that the fact that his cap hit, he's on the books for seven more years. I don't think it's going to be a bad contract. And so if you want to say maybe that's where some value can be recouped, probably there. But I don't see, you know, as Adam was saying about Kuznetsov, I don't really see them recouping value that makes them better in the current term by trading Mantha. But that may be something to look at. Now, who would you get back? Once again, I would consider, you know, investing in the blue line. I'm doing that, and this is very like antithetical to everything I believe in. But I believe that's like the, where the most leverage can come from. They were third in goals last year. Like, they don't need any more goals. They do need to shore up some way, shape, or form. The question is, you know, is there a style that they can align to? I think a lot of, you know, I pushed back a bit this in the past week or so prior to Vegas sort of dominating them on the shot counter, where people were saying Colorado was the best, you know, team in the past 10 years since the 08 Red Wings. So I was like, those 2010 Blackhawks were really good. And the reason why I pushed back against
that, 2013 Blackhawks in particular, if I remember.
Well, yes, exactly. And the reason I pushed back against that was, one, from a metric standpoint, obviously that's the team I had like the best eye test for because I watched that team religiously. And the reason for that was, like, yes, the Avalanche have an amazing blue line, a very productive blue line, but I also think it's more, some of it is the sum of parts as opposed to individual players. You know, Gerard is a great player. Makar is obviously, you know, one of the top defensemen in the league. But also think it's because they have six mobile defensemen that can sort of lead the charge and do that. But you sort of separate them out and trade them to a bunch of different rosters, you won't get that same impact that you would get. And so I think it's the same thing for the Caps. Can you identify that style of play that can sort of support John Carlson and sort of getting the puck out there on zone and getting it up to the, you know, very aggressive and very talented forwards? Can you identify what those players are? They've, you know, they lost one of those in Nate Schmidt a few years ago, got another one in Michael Kempe, you know, have gone back and forth in terms of what that next player looks like. But I think they need to double down on that more. And so if trading Mantha can get you a player like that, of that caliber, then I think that's where they really need to go from here.
Sure. And String, you know, we Chris kind of talked about style, and you kind of noted earlier that obviously with Laviolette, they're playing heavier hockey. You know, it's maybe not the most compelling at times to watch, but, you know, do you view it as maybe maximizing the Caps' current roster and kind of where they're at, or do you think that there might be a different way forward?
Well, I think they've kind of made changes to the roster to make it more that way over the last year. I mean, Laviolette came in, and that's how he wanted the team to be made. And I mean, that's what they did. I mean, they've got all the guys generally have been getting bigger, except for maybe Sheary and Sprong. So I think it's they've kind of made their bed, and now they got to sleep in it. Maybe they've got some, they can play a bit more of a hybrid style, but I don't know, Greg. It's a tough question. I mean, I wish I could say yes, they can play a different style, but honestly, I'm not sure they can.
Yeah. All right. Well, there you go. Oh, Chris. Sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. Sorry. Very quickly. So, you know, I'm looking at my numbers right now, and the reason why I'm pushing it on the defense, Laviolette has his issues. I remember going back and forth with Jack Han, and Corey Snyder at the beginning of the season where Laviolette said he wanted to play a more north-south game, take advantage of their speed, and there was some pushback against that. And I said, actually, no, that makes sense. Despite the age of the roster, because of the skill, they still, you know, 1-12 were one of the fastest skating teams last year, and still were able to maintain that. Obviously, not quite as well this year under Laviolette style. And so when I look at the forwards in comparison to all of the teams that have won a cup in the past, you know, 10 years, the forwards are fine. Like on every single metric, the forwards are, you know, above the threshold of the worst cup winner in those categories. The problem is the defensemen, you know, particularly in terms of what we talked about, you know, they are more physical. They do play better defense than the average cup winner, but in terms of being able to sort of, you know, pinch in and play off the rush to sort of make passes and plays to sort of on the blue line and sort of get the puck in. Where they're behind the curve is on the defensive side. And so if you can trade a little bit of that talent up front for more dynamic talent on the back end and really identifying who that may be, I think that's where they can sort of still maintain their identity while also getting just better, particularly in those pressure moments against a team like Boston with a heavy forecheck or Carolina that kills you if you don't have those defensemen that can move the puck.
Yeah. But Chris, it's almost like you had a copy of my agenda in front of you, because that's actually exactly where I wanted to go next. Let's get Strigum involved here. So you look at the Cavs D, and they have a lot of people locked in for a while. There's you look at, basically, we know who you know, the top four are going to be in some capacity, and also you have Nick Jensen floating around too. So I guess we can kind of lead into the expansion talk here a little bit, but to me, it's pretty clear the Caps are going to protect Orlov and Carlson, but who they protect third, I think, is kind of a more interesting question. And I pitched this to Sam yesterday, or not yesterday, last week, but among kind of Dylan, Schultz, and Jensen, do you think there's one that you would keep? And, you know, is there one that you would say, okay, maybe we would be okay if, you know, Seattle took that, slash maybe we'd be interested in trying to see if we could get some kind of value for it at the open market?
Yeah, I mean, I've made it pretty clear that I'm fine with seeing Dylan go. I mean, Dylan, I know he's supposed to be, you know, the Brooks Orpik replacement, but I mean, he's a struggle to watch. I mean, Jensen was not noticeable almost at all in the playoffs, which is a great thing, because just about every single other Caps D was
noticeably bad. Yeah.
Yeah, for various reasons. With the exception, I mean, Dmitry Orlov had some, I mean, he was very clearly the Caps' best defenseman in the playoffs. Dylan, he's not mobile. He doesn't have the ability to get back after a break. You know, I mean, he requires a lot of smart play from the Capitals forwards. You know, he's not going to bail them out. And that was clear. I mean, we saw where I think the Capitals went for a dumb change in game two against the Bruins. And then Dylan kind of didn't really check. He assumed the guy would be there and then made a blind pass up the boards, which resulted in the Marchand goal. So, neither Dylan nor Schultz am I particularly high on, but at least Schultz has a skill set that I think is a bit more valuable right now. And I think the Capitals need more mobility from their back end to make up with, again, for the aging forward core.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And I feel like, Chris, whenever I see Justin Schultz, you know, with another team, I was always like, oh, that guy's interesting. And then you kind of dig into the underlying metrics and they're maybe not as positive. And I kind of felt the same thing now having watched him for a year. But let's kind of zoom out just a touch. Like, sure. You talked about maybe the Caps giving away some of kind of the skill or effectiveness edge on the blue line. Kind of, who do you think is maybe the worst defender of that? And, what do you think is the path forward for the Caps there?
Oh, it's definitely Dylan.
Yeah.
definitely Dylan. And by question mark, I mean, Schultz has at least one. I mean, he can still sort of make a play with the puck and sort of move it to the forwards, but he's sort of at the tail end too. And so, you know, you would kind of wish that you can find a taker for his contract. And that to me is the other part where I think teams don't do this enough. They obviously do it at the expansion draft to horrible results, but sort of being willing to say, like, all right, yep, third round picks don't really move the needle all that much. Can I attach a third round pick for you to take this guy or whatever, you know? If the Rangers could find a taker from Mark Stahl's contract for a second round pick, you could definitely find someone.
They should do that in like 3 seconds, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So you could definitely, a team may actually give you, you know, 6 or 7 for Justin Schultz because they need, you know, depth on the blue line. So I think that's where they need to look at it, where it's like, it can't be much worse than these guys. Like, you know, Jensen, I think, does actually have some value. I think he actually is a pretty good defensive blue liner. And so at the very least, you know, he's above average at that skill. The problem with Dylan and Schultz is that they're not above average at anything and very below average at a lot of stuff. And so I think, you know, the fact that they have a blue line where the average age is like 32, and obviously some of that is led by Chara, but the fact that the youngest player on there, I think, was Orlov at 29, that's just not where the NHL is going.
That's not great. That's not ideal. Yeah.
Yeah, and so either you just have to believe in, you know, younger players, and I think, you know, regardless of the pedigree, I think just younger players being able to keep up with modern NHL offenses is more than enough justification to sort of give those guys a chance. But particularly if you can find someone on the free agent market, the Blackhawks, one of the things that we talked about is, you know, Alec Martinez. It's like, okay, well, you know, is he going to move your agent card down? No, but is he a better player currently than anybody on the current roster? Yes. So you figure out a way to get guys like that that can maybe move the needle a little bit. I think with defense in particular, it is like we talk a lot about strong link and weak link. I think it is a weak link game on the defense, where if you have a defensive pairing that a team can exploit, they're just going to like take advantage of it all night. And so it doesn't matter if your top pairing is a shutdown pairing. If they can just score on your third pairing all night, then that's going to be an issue. Versus it's almost better to have six, you know, average defensemen than one or two great ones and then three or four bad ones. And so I think that's the mentality that the Capitals have to take, and whatever assets they need to move from either the forwards or from the draft picks to sort of get that is probably the best way to go forward for them.
Yeah, and I guess kind of the doubly frustrating part, Chris, I would imagine, is like we talked earlier that when you have, you know, Ovechkin, Backstrom, Carlson locked to these long deals that are high money, you need to be hitting on those $2 to $3 million contracts. Cool. And, you know, having $2 to $3 to $4 million and having, you know, Schultz and Dylan both be probably misses on that front is kind of, it's kind of doubly painful that way, no?
Exactly, yeah. It, you know, as I said, every dollar counts in the NHL. And so it doesn't matter, you know, obviously giving money to your stars for, you know, 30-40% more than they're worth obviously puts you behind the eight ball, but it's even more damaging when you give it to guys who aren't contributing and are just sort of sucking up spots on the cap, because not only are they wasting your dollars, but they're also preventing better or potentially no worse options playing, and that sort of sets you back from both a on ice standpoint but also a developmental standpoint, because they're blocking, you know, pass to actual ice time for your younger players. And so I think that's something that the sooner that they can rectify, the better it is for them.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. That makes sense. All right. String real quick, we're hitting an hour here, which I feel like whenever we have Chris on that we always go long, which yeah, is great. But you know, so, some of us are hungry, that mainly being me. So let's kind of buzz through this. Goaltending wise, is kind of the one area the Caps have financial room seemingly. Do you think they get a veteran, or do you think they kind of just roll in with Vitek and Sammy this next year?
Well, I think there's a chance one of those two guys to get taken in the expansion draft, but I think if neither of them do get taken, I'd probably just roll with them again.
Okay. Chris, would you do the same, or do you think throwing a couple of mil at a veteran backup makes sense?
I think goaltending, unfortunately, is the one position that you sort of can't play around with. I think you can sort of take... I think you can take a chance on one of those guys. This is similar to the discussion with the Rangers, but obviously in a very different context, where Rangers have an abundance of goaltending talent, and the Caps are sort of lacking, although Samsonov was supposed to be the prince that was promised. So I think you sort of stick with him based on his pedigree, although obviously his production didn't value it and didn't sort of warrant it. But I think they had the right idea with going with Henrik Lundqvist and sort of kicking the tires on him. Unfortunately, it didn't work out in the most unfortunate way possible. But I think they have the right approach, and I think that's how they should. If there's anywhere on their roster where they can sort of increase the leverage and sort of get some variance in a good sense, is at the goaltending position. So you do, you know, maybe look and see, you know, if a Peter Mrazek or whoever, you know, hits the open market, you know, can you get them and maybe get one good season out of them and see if that can move the needle for you. If not, then sort of give the pipes to your younger guys and sort of roll with that. But I think that's the one area where they can improve without giving up much of their current roster.
Yeah. All right. Okay. We're at 58 minutes. So I had a big long question about the expansion draft, but String, I'm going to give you a short one. It's a thing. What would be the worst case scenario for the Caps to have Seattle take X player, and what would be the best case scenario?
Realistically, worst case, I guess.
Yeah, let's go realistic. I mean, I don't think. Maybe we say Sprong. Dylan, but I don't know. You go ahead.
Yeah, and I think Sprong would be the worst case, probably. Yeah. Realistically, again, young talented forward that the Capitals just simply don't have a lot of right now, and best case is probably Dylan.
Okay, Chris, where does your mind go there?
Yeah, it's wrong probably, because, you know, somebody has to be the worst case scenario. you know, I've been very, even more so down on the Capitals 2018 celebration, is more so down on the expansion draft. I think teams backed themselves into a corner by overthinking it and thinking how clever they were to you know, move this pick to trade this bad contract. But yeah, you know, if it's Dylan or, you know, yeah, I think Dylan or, yeah. I can't think of anybody worse than Dylan, so yeah, I think I would agree.
Although I will say post getting injured, Justin Schultz I think would like a word there too. But all right, with that we're gonna and also I'll throw Nick Jensen in for a worst case scenario. I think that would be sure. Not ideal if they took him. All right, so let's call it wraps here. We're at almost an hour, which, you know, is like, that's I think we had a good enlightening discussion. So String, I'm gonna have you go first. Where can people find you and your various musings on things?
I'm still on Twitter at StringHamA. Feel free to hit me up anytime.
There you go. And Chris, where can people find you and your various works and everything?
I am also on Twitter at yellow_pinato. Please do not hit me up because I don't want any more angry Caps fans in my mentions. You know, I'm trying to stay in the good graces of everybody for the time being until my Blackhawks achieve ascendance again. So yeah, but that's where I will be. I will have updates on my next sort of set of work from there.
Sounds great. And all right, you can find me at GregY_JR. If you like the show, please, and I'm hoping that you did if you're listening to this because we're now an hour in. So if you like the show, please rate, subscribe, review. As I've said before, we now have a lot of other Capitals podcasts. I still think we're number one, at least among like non-major media outlets when it comes to covering the Caps. So, you know, I think that like I really love to see that going. I think we have a lot of really good things to offer. And I know this offseason I have a lot of big things planned that I'm really excited about, and we'll be unveiling that as you can. So if you can just give us like a quick 5-star review or lower, please 5 stars, that would be great. And you can find the show at Jaber's Rink Radio. And next week I will announce it when it comes, but I got something pretty exciting planned, so stay tuned for that.